It was many weeks before the Nile had dropped sufficiently to be contained once more between its banks. Even then it was wreathed in silver spray, and the roaring flood continued to grind great chunks of the red rock along the bottom. It sounded as though a giant was gnashing his teeth in rage. Nevertheless, Taita gave the order for the boats to be carried down the hill and reassembled on the bank. "If you had not made us bring them up to the top, that wave would have smashed them to kindling," Merrin admitted. "I argued with you then, and I ask your forgiveness and understanding for that, Magus." "They are freely given," Taita smiled. "But the truth is that over the years I have become inured to you, jibbing like an unbroken horse at any piece of good sense I offer you." Once the boats were reassembled on the river bank, they left Kalula's old village on the heights to set up a new encampment in a pleasant wooded site closer to where the boats lay. Here they waited for the Nile to drop to a level at which it could be safely navigated. The mood in the camp was still festive. The knowledge that they were safe from further pursuit by the Jarian army, and that they need no longer fear the malignant power of Eos, was a constant source of joy to everyone. It was enhanced by the realization that they would soon be embarking upon the final leg of the long journey back to the motherland they loved so well and had missed so keenly. An enormous female hippopotamus, one of a herd that inhabited Lake Nalubale, ventured too close to the newly opened mouth of the Nile and was caught in the current. Even her great strength was insufficient to save her from being swept down the rapids. Her body was ripped and torn as she was thrown against the rocks. Mortally wounded, she dragged herself ashore just below the encampment. 50 men, armed with spears, javelins, and axes, rushed down upon her, and the dying beast was unable to flee. Once they had dispatched her, they butchered her carcass where it lay. That night, pieces of her flesh, wrapped in the luscious white belly fat, were grilled upon the coals of 50 separate fires, and once again the people feasted and danced the night through. Although they had all gorged themselves, there remained plenty to salt and smoke. It would feed them for several weeks. In addition to this, the river teemed with catfish that were stunned and disorientated by the raging waters and easily harpooned from the bank. Some were heavier than a full-grown man. They still had several tons of the durra they had taken from the Jarian granaries, so Taita agreed that some might be fermented to make beer. By the time the river had dropped to a level that allowed them to take to their oars, they were all strong, rested, and eager for the voyage to recommence. Even Hilto was almost recovered from his wound and able to take his place on a rowing bench. The Nile had changed from the sullen trickle they had known on the journey towards the land of Jari. Every bend, every shoal and reef came as a surprise, so Taita could take no chances with a night run. In the evenings they moored to the bank and built a secure stockade of thorn bushes on the shore. After a long day confined between the narrow decks, the horses were turned loose to graze until nightfall. Merrin led out a hunting party to bring in what game they could find. As soon as it was dark, men and animals were brought into the safety of the stockade. Lions roared and leopards soared around the thornbush walls, attracted by the scent of the horses and the fresh game meat. With so many humans and animals to provide shelter for, the stockade was crowded. However, because of the respect and affection in which they were held, there was always a small but private enclosure for Taita and Fen. When they were alone in their haven, their talk turned often to their homeland. Although in her other life Fen had once worn the double crown of the upper and lower kingdoms, all she knew of Egypt now she had gleaned from Taita. She was hungry for every detail of the land and its peoples, their religion, art, and customs. In particular, she longed for descriptions of the children she had borne so long ago, and their descendants who ruled now. "Tell me about Pharaoh Nefertiti." "You already know everything there is to know," he protested. "Tell me again," she insisted. "I long for the day I meet him face to face. Do you think he will know that I was once his grandmother?" "I will be astonished if he does. You are much less than half his age, so young and beautiful that he might even fall in love with you," he teased her. "That would never do," she replied primly. "First it would be incest, but far more important, I belong to you." "Do you, Fen? Do you truly belong to me?" She opened her eyes wide with surprise. "For a magus and a savant sometimes you can be obtuse, Taita. Of course I belong to you. I promised you that in the other life. You told me so yourself. What do you know of incest? He changed the subject. Who told you about it? Imbali, she replied. She tells me the things that you don't. And what did she have to say on the subject? Incest is when people who are related by blood gijima each other, she replied evenly. He caught his breath to hear the coarse word on her innocent lips. Gijima? He asked cautiously. What does that mean? You know what it means, Taita, she said with a long-suffering air. You and I gijima each other all the time. He caught his breath again, but this time held it. How do we do that? You know very well we hold hands and kiss each other. That is how people gijima. He exhaled in a sigh of relief, at which she realized he was holding something back. Well, it is, isn't it? I suppose so, or at least part of it. Now her suspicions were thoroughly aroused, and she was unusually quiet for the rest of the evening. He knew that she would not easily be fobbed off. The next night they camped above a waterfall they remembered from their journey upstream. Then the river had been almost dry, but now its position was marked by the tall column of spray that rose high above the forest. While the shore party cut the thorn bushes to build the stockade and make camp, Taita and Fenn mounted Windsmoke and Whirlwind and followed the game trail along the riverbank that was deeply scored with the tracks of buffalo and elephant and littered with piles of their dung. They carried their bows at the ready, and went forward cautiously, expecting at every turn of the trail to run into a herd of one species or the other. However, although they heard elephant trumpeting and breaking branches in the forest nearby, they reached the top of the falls without glimpsing them. They hobbled the horses and let them graze, while they went forward on foot. Taita thought of this section of the river when it had been a mere trickle in the depths of the narrow rocky gorge. Now the waters were white and foaming, leaping from rock to black rock as they flowed between the high banks. Ahead the unseen falls thundered and spray drizzled on their upturned faces. When they came out at last on the headland above the main falls, the Nile had been compressed from a width of 200 paces to a mere 20. Below, the torrent plunged through brilliant arches of rainbows hundreds of cubits down into the foaming gorge. "This is the last waterfall before we come to the cataracts of Egypt," he said. "The last barrier in our path." He lost himself in the splendour of the spectacle. Fenn seemed equally entranced by it, but in fact she was engrossed in other thoughts. With a half-smile on her lips and a dreamy look in her eyes, she leant against his shoulder. When at last she spoke, it was in a husky whisper that was almost but not quite lost in the thunder of the Nile waters. "Yesterday I spoke to Imbali again about how people gijima each other." She slanted those green eyes at him. "She told me all about it. Of course, I had seen horses and dogs doing it, but I never thought that we would do the same thing." Taita was at a loss for an adequate response. "We must go back now," he said. "The sun is setting, and we should not be on the path after dark when there are lions abroad. We shall discuss this later."